Blog Talk Radio.
All right, this is The Unknown Show. I'm your host, Bud Smith. Thanks for tuning in. Today we're going to talk to James Classy. We're going to have Mr. Rainwater Life on the show. Later on, we're going to talk to Tyler Malone. Thanks for listening. couple things in development here. The Unknown Show, Unknown Press. I kind of fuck around with these anthologies for Unknown Press. There's a new one coming out soon, Too Much. It's an anthology about excess. The last one was called First Time, and that was all about how 4 dozen writers lost their virginity. And just doing a general shout-out here for anybody looking to submit any kind of writing, Too Much. check that out. I'll put links up on the Facebook page where you can send some stuff. There was a nice write-up on Writer's Digest today about some of the efforts here to collect some of these writings together. And got that up on the Facebook wall, too. If you're not on Facebook, good for you. I shouldn't be there either. Okay, first on the show, let me get right into this, talking to James Classy. James is the author of the short story collection, Blood Cold Blue, and it's out from Press 53. James, you there?
Sure am, Bud. How are you, man?
Great. How you doing? What's going on?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. You calling from Southern California as usual?
I am calling from sunny Southern California. That's right.
Yeah?
No winter for us.
Good. Yeah, I mean, it's overrated. You know, you don't need to get involved with all this winter stuff. You know, do your own thing,
no,
okay?
No, we'd love some rain, bud. We would love some rain.
Yeah.
We'd pay good money, actually, if we could get a bit of rain here.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I mean, you're involved with a little bit of agriculture stuff, too, right?
Yeah, that's right. The wife's family ranch, so they grow avocados, and they're... Trees require an awful lot of water if you don't get any from the heavens, so it's an expensive undertaking.
Yeah. I bet
it is,
man. Are you getting tired of talking about avocados yet? Does everybody...
Oh, yeah.
Get all
Everybody wants avocados.
Yeah. James, can you send me an avocado? Why don't you go to the store and get your...
Yeah.
You got to set them straight, James. Go to the store and get your own goddamn avocados. That's what you got to tell them.
Yeah, buy your own bloody avocados. It's funny, I was in a store here a week ago in Ojai, which is, you know, about 18 miles inland. And I was in this very nice organic cafe health food store. And they're selling all these beautiful looking avocados. And I look at the sticker and they're all grown in Mexico. It's hilarious. I'm like, wait a second, we've got thousands of avocados on the coast here. Why aren't you buying those?
Yeah, well, I think that's it's a sign, you know, it's a sign for you. You gotta move the organization down to Mexico and enjoy the good life. Go down there, you know.
I'd love to. I love Mexico.
Me too.
I should move. Everything is going to move to Puerto Vallarta.
My wife keeps saying it's weird. Like, we'll talk about doing just like a weekend, you know, getaway, hop on a plane, and go to Florida, and I always cringe, you know, when I think about going down to Florida for the weekend. And then I think about our sister lives in San Diego, my wife's sister, my sister-in-law. She lives in San Diego, and for her weekend jaunt, she drives down and hangs out in beautiful coastal Mexico. I'm like, Jesus Christ,
yeah.
I want to go there.
I know. I used to live in San Diego. Lived there for 13 years, and I would I would go across the border and drive down to Rosarita Beach and different places frequently.
Yeah,
it's beautiful down there.
I think me and you could talk about avocados. We could talk about California. We could talk about Mexico.
We could talk about anything except rising forever, right?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
As soon as we'll start talking about writing, the attendance level for the listeners goes down a lot. But
I know. Yeah. Generally, it's a boring subject.
Yeah. Actually, I want to talk about your book. Your new book is not boring.
Yes.
It's called Blood of Cold Blue. It's out from Press 53, and I loved it a fucking lot.
Thank you. Well, it's a collection of short fiction, prose poems, I suppose you call them, fragments of memory. I look at it a little bit like a... it's almost like a literary kaleidoscope. So there's an awful lot of different pieces in there, and when you look at any one of them from a particular angle, you'll hopefully get something from it. And then you read another one, and it's completely different. It's a completely different vision and view of the world, and it's my honest writing, I have to say. It's not the shite that I wrote when I was in my MFA program. That is in a drawer.
Yeah.
And I put it aside, and I was back in California the year I finished my program. We came back to California, my wife and myself, and I'd been sending out my novel thesis, whatever, to agents and to all these different people, and every time I heard from somebody, and sometimes you hear from nobody, but I'd hear from a few people, and they'd always say the same thing: oh, I really love the writing, but I didn't quite fall in love with it. And I think I wasn't in love with it either, and I think it wasn't my honest, truthful writing, and I stopped trying to do that agent fitting into a square, a Squarespace game.
Yeah.
And I decided, I'm just going to write for me, and I'm going to write the things that come into my head. And that's what this book is. This book is, pretty unadulterated out of my head. And it's a combination of experience from the life I've lived, and there's an awful lot of fiction in there, and there's a lot of resonances of Ireland and home, and of Louisiana, where I spent 3 years, and other places that I've been and traveled in the world. And I'm proud of the book. It's the best I could do, and people have been very kind and generous in what they've said about it, which really, is a good thing.
Yeah, it is a good thing. I think you kind of hit on something really cool there about, maybe sometimes when you're trying to fit in somewhere else, you're never going to find your own way. You're never going to find your own gut. This book's got a lot of guts.
Yeah.
I haven't read your like you said, this stuff stuffed in a drawer from your MFA program. Whatever your opinion about your older writing, I'm sure you'll revisit it. I'm sure you'll
Oh yeah, I will. I'll pull it out of the drawer sometime, and I'll give it a good kicking around the garden, and do something with it. But this is part of the writing process, that sometimes you have to walk away from something for even years before you revisit it,
Yeah.
I mean, my wife just published a novella with CCLAP in Chicago, and she wrote it 15 years ago. And I told her I told her to take it out and start submitting it and rework it and polish it, and she did. And it was, it had a greater resonance for her, I think, after that amount of time.
Yeah. Yeah, things definitely present themselves, especially as you go. I hope, everybody's learning as they go what they do good and what they don't do good, and you can, time is a great teacher. Looking back at how
it is,
work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I look back at my old work and sometimes cringe.
Well,
oh my God.
I was just looking at some of your work today, and I was mentioning it briefly, the First Time anthology. Popped up on Kindle. We just got it on Kindle today.
Just got it in the mail, actually, from you with with Tollbooth. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, you're welcome, man. The your story leads off First Time.
I saw that.
Caught in the Act is the name of the story in that. It was a good time. Doing these anthologies is fun. What do you have in the works these days? What kind of new stuff are you up to? The book is out. Are you doing readings for it? Or are you?
I'm doing a few readings. I'm doing a reading up in San Luis Obispo at the start of March, and I'm trying to organize some readings down in Los Angeles. Writing wise, I have a novel that's set in Ireland. Sort of a coming of age story that Trice Publishing are going to publish, and I'm in the middle of editing and reconfiguring part of that.
And great.
Then other than that, I'm writing some longer stories now, some longer short stories, moving away from the very short fragmented flash fiction, but I'm still writing that, but I'm doing a few longer pieces and getting them out there into the world, which is nice.
Well, that's
kind of
cool.
Trying to stretch myself.
Yeah. That's gotta be cool. Cause I would say, you have a lot of work out there. You definitely have a lot. You're one of these writers who I admire online. You have it seems you have a never ending, fortitude of submitting your stuff, getting it out there, getting it seen. It's usually flash fiction, which is adventurous stuff. Adventurous stuff. I'm looking forward to seeing some longer stuff from you.
Well, I hope so. I mean, I've definitely, since I've started teaching high school again, I've been very, very slow in terms of submitting and publishing. So the only pieces that are coming out now are ones that got accepted before the turn of the year. So I'll get back to submitting, probably as soon as I get a little break from school.
Oh, yeah. I haven't been fucking submitting nothing, man. We get in these phases, of writers, you want to get your work seen, you want to do this, you want to do that. But you're talking about working on edits for a novel. You got to be in that mode right now, aren't you?
Exactly.
Yeah, you're talking to that.
You got to leave the other stuff alone, and then I've committed to. I've been doing some book reviewing for Philadelphia Review of Books and Fjord Review and F.W. Rickson. So, I've got these books that I've committed to reviewing. So that's on the plate. So there's an awful lot on my plate, and I've got a 2-year-old. So there are not enough hours in the day.
Oh yeah. I guess the trick is balancing the stuff you really want to do and that age-old secret saying no. So, when the kid starts crying and wants to be fed or paying attention, you just go, no, right?
You can't say no to her. She's too cute. But the old story is, time to sleep when I die, You just keep doing it. Keep working,
Yeah. That great Warren Zevon song, right? Sleep When I'm Dead. Oh man!
Yeah, exactly.
That's the shit right there.
Sleep When I'm Dead. Yeah, we've got a very short tenure on this old planet. Look at God rest poor Philip Seymour Hoffman. I mean, you never know what's coming in the future, and we should cherish the time we have and be as productive as possible, and be grateful for what we have.
Yeah, man. That's really cool. It's cool too. You're telling me I like asking you. I don't want to say you California California people. You're definitely a child of the world. You're a child of the world. But when I say James,
California now.
When I say James, where are you doing readings or whatever? And you say San Luis Obispo and Los Angeles. I'm like, oh, that's fucking awesome. When I say I'm doing readings, I'm going, you know, down to Beechwood, New Jersey. At the VFW hall, you know. I love it.
I'll go down there too. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
I wish I could go to Seattle for AWP, but I just can't get the time off teaching, you know.
Yeah. Well, I just got off the phone with Aaron Dietz. Old Aaron Dietz. He's putting me up. He's got a spare bedroom in there in his super space age Seattle house there. He's got one of these super environmental houses that collects the rainwater and they can water the plants and stuff with it and stuff. And I can't wait to get out there and just, you know, see some good old friends.
You're a lucky bastard. As we say in Ireland, you're on the pig's back.
I'm on the pig's back.
You're on the pig's back. You got a place to stay. You'll be beard up, and you'll be at the readings and at all the events. It's a good time. It's a good time. I was at the one in D.C. a couple of years ago. It's crazy. Jesus. Yeah. I have to go to a school meeting now.
Cool.
In about 2 minutes, believe it or not. Can you?
Well, I got to say, man, it's always a pleasure when you call in, and I'm glad that we were able to talk for a bit, and good luck at your school meeting, all right?
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, it's all about talking to the parents and figuring out, you know, how to help these poor kids out, because, you know, there's a lot of needy kids in the world, and we have to save them one at a time.
Well, I commend you, man. Keep putting up with
man.
Those little fucking brats, all right?
No, they're not. But I'll tell you what, next time I call in, I'm going to read something for you, okay?
Yeah, man. I'm sorry that we didn't get I'm really sorry we didn't get a reading in tonight. We got carried away with all this fucking chit-chat.
We did, but you know what? Stuff comes up. Usually I'd have no problem with time, but today I have this meeting that, you know, that the admin has me going to, so got to go and take care of business. But you have a great rest of the show, and we'll talk soon, okay?
All right, man. Well, be good over there, okay? Good luck.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And keep the faith, all right?
I will.
Okay, bud.
All right.
Enjoy AWP, bro.
Oh, I'll definitely try. That was James Claffey. He's off to go and talk to some parents. I wish him well. Jeez, I don't know what the hell. I don't know how I would do talking to parents. Oh, boy. So... There's a couple other things going on these days. Uno Kudo is basically, we're on the verge here of opening submissions for Uno Kudo 4, which I mentioned Aaron Dietz before. Aaron Dietz and myself editing fiction coming in. We got some, we're looking for poetry, fiction, anything you got, creative nonfiction. We're looking for articles, whatever. Once again, Facebook page will pop up with this call for submissions, and as usual, it's going to be the best lit that we can find that comes in submission wise. It's going to be paired up with artwork gathered by Erin McParland, and she really does a hell of a job. For as lazy as I am, I think Erin is the opposite, just as motivated. She's probably scouring the internet right now, finding these amazing artists. I'm just sitting here on my ass. At least I'm not drinking beer right now. So I'm just waiting here. Just give me 1 second. I'm trying to get Misty Rainwater on the show here. Telling her to call in as we speak. Un momento, por favor. We'll be right back. All right, sorry about that little intermission. Usually I get my fucking groceries delivered in the middle of the show. This week, no groceries, but we got Missy Rainwater Light on the show. And Missy's the author of many, 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 many books. She's always got some kind of great poetry thing going on, some novels out the wazoo. They're just shooting up everywhere. And recently, we're talking on the heels of a brand new novel release from Epic Rights Press. And I got to say, it's a great book. The book is called Bullshit Rodeo. And Misty, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no, it's totally great. It's always great to have you. Well, you've never been on this show, but you know, your work speaks for itself, and it's cool to finally get to talk to you.
Thank you.
What's going on right now? Wherever it's going on.
I just got home from class. I'm craving Blow Pops. I wish that we had a store that delivered groceries in San Antonio. That rocks. I have to drive to Walmart and HEB.
Yeah. I don't, whenever I'm in another town or something and I got my car and easy access, like driving to the store and going to Walmart or like a Target, for me and my wife is like the most amazing thing, you know, like walking around, like living here in the city, everything is like, it's like, you know, midget size. You know, you go to buy toilet paper and it'll be like the same price, but it'll be like an eighth of the size, you know, and you're like, why, you know?
Oh, yeah. When I was in San Francisco for a month, that was a culture shock, getting my groceries at, like, the corner store. There was liquor, and then there was Cheetos and not much else.
Oh, yeah.
I heard there was a Target there, but I never did find it.
Yeah. And when you can go, and there's, like, a grocery, when all of a sudden I'm at a place that has grocery carts, I'm like, whoa. Because, you know, the bodegas around here, you have to, like, go sideways to fit down the aisle some of these places. yeah. So, you're going to class for creative writing, regular kind of writing stuff. What are you going to school for?
Yeah, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I'm going to UTSA. I went to college in the 90s. I went to Texas State and San Marcos and Shriner University in Kerrville. And I kept dropping out for various reasons, mainly because I couldn't pass remedial algebra.
Uh-huh.
And I'm basically tired of being on SSI. I can't really live on SSI, so I thought, what the hell, I'll go to college and get my bachelor's, and then from there, if I can pass intermediate algebra, finally, go for my MFA maybe, but I'm not really sure. I'm just kind of taking the financial aid and just going with it. So it's my second semester to be back. I started last semester.
Yeah, so I'm sure it's always cool to just dive back in, and I'm sure you always learn something, you know, learn something new. I've never been to college. I've always wanted to go. Things have, kept me from going too. I get delayed here, pushed away from it. But so, I want to ask you about the new book. I know it's been out before. This is revamped. This is a whole new light on Bullshit Rodeo. And it's out from Epic Rights Press, Wolf Karsten's imprint. So what's going on with the book? Is it you must be pretty psyched.
Yes, I originally did it myself at Lulu.com, and I guess it was October of 2010 after I had this to San Francisco. I was actually in the Albuquerque airport overnight, and I literally had the whole airport to myself. Not even any workers were in there. It was bizarre.
Yeah.
And there was no bar, you know, nothing to do. So I just sat there and kind of in a wild fever, just a feverish pace. I wrote down the rough draft or most of it. And then I went home and I wrote it in about a month, the rough draft, and then put it up at Lulu. And that's kind of my pattern. I put the rough draft at Lulu. I publish the rough draft and I go back and I order a copy and I'm like, oh, well, this sucks. So I do it again. And I revised it numerous times, and then it was on Blunt Trauma Press. I think it was 2011 or 2012 it was on Blunt Trauma. And I decided to go ahead and kill that contract. And Wolf had been a champion of my book all along. He just loved it. He couldn't say enough good things about it. And so he went ahead and said he would publish it for me. And so, it's been out for a couple of weeks now on Epic Rights Press. I'm waiting for my contributor copies. And
cool.
Once I get them, I want to – I guess dive into the San Antonio literary scene. I've kind of tested the waters a little bit, but, you know, do some things here in San Antonio to promote the book and maybe sell a few copies.
Yeah. Yeah, I've read the book. I enjoy the book. I kind of don't shut the fuck up about it, you know. I think it's, yeah, I blurb it and stuff. I just enjoy it. It's a great book. But I like what you say about the, I like what you say about a couple things we were just talking about. Writing a first draft in a month. I really dig that. I think that's fucking awesome. And I kind of cringe when I hear about writers who are taking, oh, Jesus Christ, it's like 6 months, a year, you know, and their first draft still isn't done. But it doesn't work for everybody, writing stuff feverishly, writing it quick. And I really like what you're talking about this whole using print-on-demand, using Lulu, other alternatives to Lulu, like something like CreateSpace. They're printing out your first draft in a book. All of a sudden, this thing that used to be something that was on your computer screen and it's in limbo with a press, let's say. All of a sudden now, you're just showing up at your house and it's $4, $5 cost you to ship it. And you got a real book. You can fucking tear it apart from there, right?
Yeah, exactly. I found out about Lulu in 2005 when I did NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month, October, November of 2005. I wrote my first novel, Nope Has Gone Potty. And they said after you finished, if you've completed the contest, if you've actually written the 50,000K plus manuscript, you can get it published at Lulu and we'll send you your first copy for free. And so I got addicted right away when I had an actual book in my hands that I had written and I did all the work, the cover art, the editing, proofreading, publishing, all of it. And so it was just like instant gratification, you know?
Oh yeah.
So.
Yeah. Going back to 2005, similar thing, you know, to me, same thing with me, Lulu. I used to, you know, make Lulu books, and throughout the years, tons of them unpublished, you know. They've gone as far as second drafts or whatever, you know, and then you keep fucking with them, keep ripping at them, keep tearing at them. And that's cool. That's cool, this do-it-yourself, punk rock kind of taking on a project. And like we were talking about, doing the cover art. Doing the editing, doing the proofreading. And maybe it's not, like, the tightest, best thing in the world, but you're learning every time you do a book, right?
Oh, absolutely.
As opposed to, I don't know, I just dig that. I like when somebody's jumping in full feet with a project. You know, it's like saying, oh, I got my draft. I'm sending it off to a press. I hope something happens to it. And it's, you know, you can do this shit. You can fucking get a little more involved and you'll get more out of it in the long run.
I had this wild fantasy a few years ago of actually finding a literary agent that was laughable. That's when I had Nova's Gone Potty. And so I sent out maybe 5 or 6 query letters to these agents I'd found in Writer's Digest or whatever magazine.
Yeah.
And I didn't even get an email back even expressing any amount of interest whatsoever. And my ex-husband was like, well, with the title, like, Nova's Gone Potty, you're not going to really get any interest. And, you know, it's a kooky novel. It doesn't generate a lot of interest. A girl that's constipated and her toilet talks are in an Ozzy Osbourne accent. There's just not much of a market for that, I guess.
Yeah, right. I think the my wife's work is really cool, you know, and they, like, pay for her to do some kind of, like, continuing education things here and there sometimes. She's like, you know, so I was able to sneak into one of those, she signed up for this, but I went, and it was, like, one of these, like, you go to it, and they teach you how to, like, pitch your shit to an agent or, like, learn how to write query letters. And, oh, my God, you want to fucking laugh. You go to one of these things, and you see these fucking, these disgusting people just populating this whole convention center, you know, the agents, the, you know, but, you know, I guess there is a whole art to learning this weird query letter shit. It's something different. You got to get it just right. You know, there's websites for that, like Query Shark, they call it. This woman will rip your query letter apart, you know, and tell you why you fucking suck.
Right.
Yeah, then you can rewrite your crap and resubmit. How's that sound? So what's
next? Yeah, I'll
just
do it myself. And
yeah,
well, I spent a month in San Francisco. That was January of last year. Went there on a Greyhound bus right after Christmas, and I was there, but I've written about it. You might have read it. I don't know, but there was kind of a strange situation in my life after, on Christmas Eve of 2012. I went into a bar and met this guy, and I was with him for 30 hours, and my family didn't know where I was. My phone was turned off, and I wasn't thinking of my phone. I was drunk off my ass for 30 hours, basically. Anyway, we had this fling, and then I hoped we'd have a relationship, you know, crazily enough, but that didn't happen. So I just took the Greyhound to San Francisco, and then he called me when I was out there, and he said, come back to San Antonio, I'll buy your ticket. And I'm living in Eagle Pass doing contract work. He's a plumber, and he was working on this casino in Eagle Pass, this Texas border town. Yeah. So anyway, I came back to Eagle Pass, and then lived in cheap motel rooms for a few months, and then I moved into his travel trailer in San Antonio, and I've been here off and on approximately 20, 25 times ever since. And he inspired me. He's absolutely my muse. When we were living in the cheap motel rooms in Eagle Pass, he encouraged me to write short stories. He'd rip them at my staff, and so he'd come home from work, from working at the casino, and I have a new story for him. And so I've got two stories coming out in Gargoyle this summer, and I've had them in a few places, Unlikely Stories. And anyway, after writing the short stories, coming back to San Antonio, I decided to write a novel based on how we met and my time in San Francisco and all that. It's called Walking the Earth, and I've done the rough draft, but I've not done it at Lulu yet, but I want to maybe in the next couple of months order the rough draft and then go from there.
Yeah, and then getting into redraft and digging into it, right? That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. You know what? I was wondering if you got anything you want to read. Usually I try to get some readings in on the show. It's a very informal show. I get caught up here talking to people, and unfortunately you're so interesting that I forgot to ask you 5 minutes ago. Do you have anything you feel like you'd be in the mood to read tonight?
Let's see. I'm going to Google my name real quick. I'm here on the computer.
There you go. That's the best
way
to do it.
And I'll find a story. Okay. Oh, Unlikely Stories. Let me see what that is. Okay, this is good. Unlikely Stories, Texas Casino. This is a short story. Is it okay to read a short story? Do we have time for that?
Fuck yeah, you got all the time in the world.
Okay.
Go for it.
The men leered and talked shit around the table. There goes the diaper money. Balls to the wall, man. Kiss my ass and call it breakfast. Crystal sat next to the only other woman at the table, an elderly woman, flashy with makeup and jewelry and a zebra print blouse. Henry, Crystal's boyfriend, had given her $50 to play Texas Hold'em. He was playing at the next table, sexy and confident as fuck in his black cowboy hat. They had practiced in their motel room with cards and poker chips Henry bought at Walmart. They had fought. It's good you're doing this here in the privacy of our room. If you did this in the casino, people would think you're an idiot, Henry had said at one point. He had written down the different hands in one of Crystal's spiral notebooks. The dealer and all the other players were staring at Crystal. She felt the idiot. She felt the alien. This was not an uncommon feeling for Crystal. You've got to put in three more chips. There was a raise, a Latino sitting across the table from Crystal said with a smile. He wasn't an asshole like the others. Six poker chips at once seemed excessive to Crystal. Soon all her chips would be gone, and she would have to go to the bar or play a goddamn slot machine while her boyfriend sat and grinned and stacked his chips. The sex was good, but it didn't send Crystal into outer space. She missed the vibrator she had left in the bathroom of her ex-husband's apartment in San Antonio, but her fingers got the job done with frequent efficiency. In between orgasms, there were walks and sprints around the deck park, walks to H-E-B and Dairy Queen, and poems. Crystal was addicted to reading and writing poems. Sometimes she read poems to Henry, sometimes he liked them. What are you playing, blackjack? The young chubby Latino to Crystal's left asked. I thought I was playing backgammon, Crystal replied. She sipped her Cape Cod. She wanted a Corona dressed with salt and a lime, but she was tired of her bloated stomach. She was road tripping to Corpus Christi with Henry next weekend. Crystal hadn't worn a bikini since her first semester at Texas State University. Maybe if she wore a bikini and looked decent enough in it, Henry would keep her around a while. Crystal didn't have any place else to go. She had tried living in San Francisco for a month, couldn't afford it. There was always her grandparents' house in Bridgeport. Crystal would rather sleep on a sidewalk. Crystal's relationship with Henry was a Billie Holiday song, a raw, aching thing that could not be dismissed with logic and common sense. So the sex was not starry, so he insulted her. So she called him El Chongo. So they argued about stupid shit such as towels and plastic spoons. Crystal loved the motherfucker so much she was willing to spend hours of her life in an Indian casino mocked by cigarette smoke and bottles of beer and flashing lights and annoying sounds and shit toppers with their towers of chips. I want to go flying, the cockiest, mouthiest Latino at the table said. He had a pair of brown plastic nets on the table in front of him, a good luck charm. He showed his cards, two aces. Crystal felt like gouging out his eyeballs and spitting in his beer for good measure. It occurred to Crystal that she was Alice at the tea party and the cocky, mouthy Latino was the Mad Hatter. Crystal's stomach grumbled. Crystal's stomach wanted pizza and deep-fried Oreos, not the Caesar side salad from Wendy's. Too goddamn bad, stomach. There's a man in the bed. He must be kept there at all costs. I just lost my ass, Crystal told Henry. Judging by the chips in front of Henry, he seemed to be at least $100 ahead. What are you going to do, go to the bar? Henry asked. He was congenial, not pissed. No, I'm going to go play a goddamn slot machine. Crystal had seven wrinkled singles in her purse. She sat down at the Sex and the City penny slot and betted her first dollar. No Mr. Big, no luck. Carrie was such a skinny yet fetching bitch. All that hair, those dresses, those heels. That sweet little modest apartment. How does it feel to make money as a writer and live in New York City and get that Mr. Big cock? Crystal muttered at the machine. No, ding, ding, ding. The machine was not Crystal's friend. The machine would knock Crystal a Cosmopolitan or a Weekend in the Hamptons. The machine would not go down on Crystal and stay down until she screamed, yes, fuck me, I'm coming. Fuck, I'm coming again. They sat together on a bench by a palm tree waiting for the shuttle that would take them back to the Goose and the Gander Inn. Crystal loved the way Henry smelled. He didn't wear cologne. Fuck, was that his natural scent? He lost everything at the table. Crystal lost her last $7 to the unsexy slot machine. Crystal didn't give a fuck. She just wanted to inhale her boyfriend and bite his brown neck. You need to find your soulmate. I'm so ready for you to stop being lonely, a young woman was saying to a young man in the casino entrance. Well, that sounds great in theory, he replied. There are so many possibilities these days, what with Twitter and Facebook and all the dating sites. There's really no excuse not to find a soulmate. Yeah, but things can go from rosy to crappy in the blink of an eye. You think I haven't tried? I've tried. Hell, I even joined a Baptist church last month. I go to Sunday school. Well, how is it? Free donuts and coffee. The bitches are okay, but I haven't got my cosmic match. When you find her, you'll know. You'll be struck by lightning. Something to look forward to. Exactly. Crystal met Henry in a karaoke bar. She was alone. He was with his three sons. Crystal knew she had to meet Henry when he sang All the Young Dudes. She bought him a beer. He was already trashed from tequila. He kissed and groped Crystal in the alley behind the bar. Then they took a taxi to a La Quinta Inn and indulged in hours of sweaty, drunken sex. A lot of details of that night were lost in the beer fog, but Crystal remembered Henry had enthused over her tits, and that went a long way in endearing Henry to Crystal. Also, at one point, Crystal had returned to bed from the bathroom. She had turned away from Henry on the other side of the bed. That ain't no way to get into bed, Henry had muttered. Crystal had smiled and apologized and pressed her tits against Henry's back and clung to him like seaweed. The next morning, they ate chips and salsa in bed and watched a Hitchcock movie. It wasn't Vertigo, Crystal's favorite. We're a couple of losers, Henry said into his pillow as Crystal straddled him and kneaded his back with her knuckles. It's all relative, baby. I don't feel like a loser right now. I feel like I just hit the jackpot. That's sweet. Do you mean it? That's truth. I say what I mean and mean what I say. Comprehende? Si, comprehende, mamacita. Bueno. Outside the door, cars roared and rap music boomed and drunk voices screamed trash. Money was being spent and people were eating and people were dying and the moon was a dusty crescent and people who owned telescopes could count the craters. Crystal preferred to leave the counting to people who enjoyed numbers. for Crystal, the moon all those miles away was miracle enough. She didn't need a telescope. She could see that the moon was pretty fucking special.
That's something else. Is that like a chunk from Walk the Earth that got published as a short story or just something different?
No, I mean, it could be a chapter from Walking the Earth, but it's just a short story I wrote during that time when I was in Eagle Pass.
That's great. Yeah, I'm a fan. I'm a fan. It's badass.
Thank you.
Looking forward to that book. I want to thank you for coming on the show. It's been a big pleasure talking to you. And we'll have to do it again very soon.
Okay, great. Sounds good.
All right, keep it real, Misty. Talk to you later.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. Yeah, you caught me chewing some almonds there at the end. Very rudely, chewing almonds. Next on the show, we're going to talk to Tyler Malone. And
what's
Tyler's
up,
there now. Are you there, Tyler?
I'm right here, man. How are you doing?
Hey, I got to say, you were listening to Misty read that story, huh?
I was, man. I really dig her really pretty creative, like, pop culture references.
She's awesome.
She's like a female Sam Lipsty or something like that. I dug it.
Yeah. And are you calling from Texas right now, too? I mean, she
I am, man.
Where
I think she said she's from right outside of Austin in Georgetown.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So what's going on in Texas tonight?
Nothing much, man. I'm drinking for you. Because you said you weren't drinking, which is just a travesty.
Hold on a second. I'm going to walk to the refrigerator, and I'm going to get a beer. Hold on a second.
There we go.
I keep pretending that I'm not drinking as much anymore, which is like it's a horrible lie. It's a lie that keeps perpetuating itself into bigger and bigger lies, apparently. You know, we had a Super Bowl party here the other day, and oh, my God, you should have seen how much beer was left. I said, please take this shit home with you.
But they left it for you. They're gracious hosts, right?
Yeah. The gracious host, Mr. Chuck Howes here, and brought a bunch of beer and a cake. He brought a football cake and left everything. Take this stuff home with you.
did you
have any money on the game?
Like, advisable. Oh, no, man. That was the first football game that I've watched in 5 years. I thought it was a great game, but apparently it was a terrible football game. But to me, it was just a bunch of guys chasing balls on TV, I'll be honest.
Yeah. That's awesome. So you got a lot of cool stuff going on, and you're still doing the website Matt Swirl, right?
That's right, man. I'm the short story editor.
Short story editor. Are submissions open now for that?
Oh, all the time. They never stop.
So people got to do a short story.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Please do. We want to do some annual anthology stuff sometime soon. There's always, even though it's just an online publication, which I shouldn't say just, we definitely want to, sort of take it to the next level and actually, you know, cherry pick our favorites and sort of provide like an actual book, like a physical book and things like that. So it's pretty ambitious. It's hard to do with just some guys who run Mad Swirl, you know, a few hours of the week. But it's a goal. We'll do it one day.
Yeah, it's mostly, it's like sending all these emails out, you know. You send an email, you know, even when you do an anthology with authors, you know, if they agree to it, and they're gonna put their story in the thing, and you send out 30 emails, you need all these bios. Jesus Christ, man! Somebody can take a fucking year to send you a bio. That's where it all comes
exactly.
Down to.
I mean, if I hadn't seen on Facebook yesterday that I was doing this tonight, like, you would have not seen the bio. I mean, it was like, that's the kind of student I am. I guess that's the sort of radio host I am. With Matt Swirl, we're sitting on all these stories and we're sitting on all the bios. Like, the hard work is done. It just requires the editors to to get off our asses and do something.
Fuck yeah. So I want to get right into it with you, man. Why don't you read some stuff here? Why don't you
absolutely.
Keep the reading stuff going on. Give me a couple things, whatever you want.
Yeah. I'm writing a book right now, but it won't be. I won't bore anybody with my droning voice and prose. I'll Misty's from San Antonio, so I'll read a poem that I wrote in San Antonio.
Cool.
And actually, just I'm not going to plug. I don't like plugging anything, but I put these poems on my blog, theonlyblogever.com.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know if anyone wanted to read along or what. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
Why don't you send me the links, and I'll put them up on the Facebook wall for this show, and people can see that link, and they'll be able to go and read them from there also.
Yeah, absolutely, man. But the first one's called Red Parade. It's about the Cesar Chavez parade on Easter morning in San Antonio. The sun doesn't rise on the sun's risen day. It's unrolled as low as a hobo's sidewalk head, as coffee creatures queue for to-go carriers to survive salvation, enjoy day-to-day disasters, but not Easter Sunday, when sunrise service sloths and hail redeemed fair trade beans, as the communist parade passes, turning blood into soil. Cesar Chavez lives again in the miracle of memory. Men live forever in the Spanish Inquisition's street serenade. Easter egg children eat air conditioning, hold belt loops, and ask why some sleep outside on the stones. From a combat boot pillow, a man asks for a bus. 50 cents? He's in the need of a baptismal bath. With brown teeth, knuckle-down children, the saved say, we give to our church, our God, not humanity. What is life but a death for our Lord? We have our drug. Pray you'll find yours. And there we go. It's a very positive, uplifting poem about assholes on a Sunday morning.
Yeah, that's what you got to have, man. You got to have that positivity. I would definitely describe you as one of the most positive people I know. I don't know you in person, but online. And it's very very refreshing. I picture you with, like, the glowing white light behind you right now. Is that true or is that a projection?
Actually, my little office is pretty dark right now. I'm sort of huddled around in a little 40-watt bulb. I'll turn some lights on to get a glow going
on. Turn some lights
on,
shit. Rock on.
Well, I appreciate
this another
positivity, man. Yeah,
you got to have that positivity.
Well, actually, I think I'm
people, bro.
Man, I think I'm positive because I'm in person when I talk about things or when I approach a problem, I'm pretty cynical.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever I write, I sort of pull out all the kinks and try to find, you know, something beautiful in poverty or something like that, or I don't know if that makes any sense. But this poem, I think, is pretty uplifting. It's not as short as the last one, but it's still pretty short. Wrote it for the open mic that Mad Squirrel does first Wednesday of every month at the Absinthe Lounge in Dallas. And this poem is about poets, authors, anybody, and it's called Swirl Mad. Our self-portraits are warning labels on cigarette packets. Bones burn as white wedding chapels of fire among desert dunes. As smoke stains heaven's floorboards, we use angels' halos as toilet bowls. There is more than deviancy in our beautified bodies and empty glasses. We're the boys and girls next door. You can hear our fucking through walls. When it stops, we write about yesterday for tomorrow's sake, because we won't remember tonight. And you'll hate us, because we'll love you for what you don't. We want your dull bones, chilled blood. We'll bring you fire as we move mountains to drain oceans. We don't sleep, but we dream for all those who live to sleep. For them, we see mankind's monumental end. We can't tell you how to live. All writers write is how to live lost. All we want isn't 15 minutes of fame. We seek failure, to write false starts, to stand at the sidelines sucking Gatorade as people play atop a lopsided slant, believing all the world is level. Say speaking up is the devil, we'll call it our nightly hobby. Dry earth gulps, but breathes a sigh of relief as we banish paper asteroids to waste bins, but dies during billion-dollar summer blockbusters. Earth lives for big gulps and telling art they shut the fuck up. It's trying to sleep. But we keep the bed hot, sheets sweaty, and swirled, and the swirled world burning. And there we go. I think that's for pretty much everybody who stays up late and writes about what they don't like in themselves or thinks about for other people what they don't want to talk about. And that's what I think
cool.
most artists do.
Yeah. So this reading happens, you said, the first Wednesday every month?
Yeah. I think the goal now is to feature a different Mad Swirler, and I think some people have come out of town before.
Yeah.
But it's a magazine in Dallas. I don't live in Dallas, so I don't read the publications that go around there. But it's been nominated for best open mic scene in Dallas a few times. It's pretty good stuff.
It's awesome. I want to talk to you a little bit about you have a when I was reading this bio you sent me, we were talking before about bios, and The Brief Life is the Best. It came out in 2012.
Yeah.
It's a book
That's
of
cool.
What is it like a chapbook full of poems or what?
Yeah, I think it's like 120 pages. So it's not a chapbook.
Cool.
It's poems
yeah,
that I wrote when I was in. Oh, thanks, man. It was poems that I wrote in college. I went to college in a really small, really poor town. It's like 70% under the poverty line, and it was compulsory to write. Like I was a bartender there, and just seeing meth addicts all the time to the point where I think meth is like a bad, like it's like a joke. But there, it's like a very real like culture, and as well as poverty. So I just wrote about that, and I went to a private Baptist university, and I'm not a Baptist of any sort. So from the outside looking in, I was sort of compelled to write about religion and poverty and all of that stuff.
That's cool.
So there we have it.
There you got it. What are you fucking around with these days? Tell me about a little bit about this novel.
The novel is excites me to the point where I'm anxious, and I've never really been anxious about anything. It's about a Christian rock band. It starts rocking for God in high
cool.
school, and then they go for a and then they go out for their first tour, and they discover the delights of alcohol and anal sex and all of that good stuff. So it's really that. I was raised in a really sort of a regressive religious house, and this is like everything that I have. And I think my only goal is to not write about it pessimistically, but sort of present it in a very endearing but unflinching and as a matter of fact sort of way. And that's a real challenge for me.
Well, that's good. Sounds like you got yourself all set up for kicking some ass right there.
I'm trying, man. You have to finish it. You really have to. I don't know. You have to. With something like that, I think that's the problem with my first book is, and I don't want to bitch about anything, was that it just wasn't ready. Like, I'm glad that my first book came out 2 years ago, and not many people in their 25 have that luxury when an actual publisher picks it up. I can't even, honestly, look somebody in the face and tell them, oh, I'm an author, my first book's out, and you should go to Amazon and buy it right now. Just because I'm still very, I didn't believe it. I didn't enjoy it. So, and this book is something I'm really pouring a lot of effort into. So there we have it.
There you got it. Now, to kind of lead the show out here, would you read some more?
Oh, shit, absolutely, man. Let me, give me a second. I was not ready. I know it's not good radio for someone to dig around and look for something.
Are you kidding me? This show's a mess. I do absolutely no research on any of these guests. I don't really know who half the people are. I was lucky tonight. I at least knew you guys, from
right
passing. This show's a mess. Take your time.
I have something. My wife's a school teacher, and so I get I get to attend these terrible, just dramatically horrible things. And the school that she teaches pre-calculus at, they have like this renowned dance team that like travels all over Texas in these stupid sequin cowboy hats. But there's like a JV team. Like if you don't make this team, it's really astounding and they do amazing dance moves. You're put on the scrub team, and
cool.
I've had to watch the scrubs.
That's why
I've had to watch the scrubs perform. It's like you just wish the parents would say, "It's okay, find something
you're
else."
You're not
to
a
do.
Dancer. Yeah.
Exactly.
Anything
like
else.
You weigh at least 275 pounds. You're not going to squeeze into that. You can do anything else. Don't subject yourself to that. But they keep dancing. Bless their souls. They keep dancing. And this is a poem for them, and music. It's called Golden Dazzlers, which is the name of this dance troupe. Dance through the tunes of a hopeless world, impressed only when shoes are strained of toenails, broken ankles, and when ginormous pulled groins are censored. We clap for final productions only. We reserve cheers like gold for anything but hopeful failures. Uncooked golden nuggets of bulbous teenage bellies. The smell of travel bag chips collapses in seat cracks as the collected audience shifts to complain to phone screens so they won't look up to see the strobe lit dazzle, tasseled sequin shame, as form-fitting latex gloves over gasping human heads. There are no sweat beads, but they wear never-weary smiles. To work would be to stop smiling. That's all they have. There is nothing noble in so many things, certainly bad dancing. There they are, perpetual failures in slippers moving in missteps with misshapen thick hips before anyone screams that dancing is a bad decision. The audience does not connect eyes as for any first time, ensuring at least one of us is having a good time. Young, dazzled girls should be anywhere else, on top of anything but a stage, under stars, under their first boyfriend, under headphones, under the influence of music. So there we go.
There you go. And I want to thank you for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure, man.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. It's been a pleasure. I want to wish you luck with the continuation of the readings, these mad swirl readings that are happening every Wednesday night. And also, I hope you send me those links. I want to put them up to find these poems on your blog, okay?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, cheers to you too, my friend. And,
take care.
Take care, man. So that's going to do it. It's going to do the show. I want to thank all the guests. James Claffey, his book, Water Cold Blue. Check that out, Press 53. Vicky Rainwater Lights. She read a short story published at, Jonathan Petty's site. And her book, Walk the Earth, back up coming soon. The recent book, Epic Rights, it's called Bullshit Rodeo. Check that out. We just talked to Tyler Malone with Mad Swirl. So, thanks for tuning in. Next Tuesday, the show comes back, and we're going to talk to Jesse Alvarez, Kevin Ridgway, and I'm going to have one of my good friends come on the show, Mike Grover. He's just an all-around interesting guy. Mark Grover's father, if you guys are familiar with him or what, he's calling it Morgan. So tune in then, if you can, and until then, be good at all the stuff you're doing. Thank you. Good night. Yeah.